from the capital city of the state of Oregon, it's Good Morning Salem with Stacy Ann.
Good morning to you. You're listening to Reliable News Talk Radio, KSLM, together on this terrific Tuesday, the 30th day of March. And with me in the studio this morning is Joshua. Hello, Josh.
Hello.
I'm telling you, it is a Tuesday. It's a chilly Tuesday, 39 degrees. I kind of had it. Well, I didn't. Terry scraped the windshield. He's so good to me this morning to get me on my way. And I'm still getting used to this. 9 o'clock, I feel like I'm still tardy to school, you know, because I'd been used to being earlier in the morning on the show. And so it's been kind of nice in the mornings to have that cup of coffee and kind of watch the news and listen to Jeff's show. But I feel like I'm kind of running behind. And here it is, 9 a.m. and we're getting going, right?
That's right.
There's lots of news this morning I want to share. But first and foremost, I want to say happy birthday to my daughter in love. She's married to my oldest son. Her name is Esma, and it's her birthday today. And so I wish you a very happy birthday. I got a call from my son last night, and they're having big fires in the Black Hills of South Dakota. Maybe you guys have heard this on the news, but someone had like a slash. You know how we do that in the country? You have like a slash pile, you know, burning debris and all that kind of stuff. And apparently they didn't make sure it was completely out, and it was very windy yesterday, and it erupted all within the Black Hills and several different hot spots. And so we're keeping those folks in our prayers today. And certainly an update on yesterday, we had Kelly on and Bob on giving us an update. They were doing, I don't know if you caught this at all, Josh, they were doing a press conference in Vancouver because of about 6 weeks ago or so, there was an incident where a daughter had taken her mother in to get looked at the hospital, and they kept her, called them anti-vaxxers and all that. They separated. She had power of attorney and all of that. Well, mm-hmm. People's Rights showed up and said about 40 people outside and said, no, you need to let her go. Either you need to let her be with her mother in the hospital, or you need to release her because she does not want to stay. Anyway, they had a press conference yesterday at the courthouse that went really, really well, and no arrest warrants were issued as of yet to those in the crowd. And of course, they're trying to change the narrative. And the narrative is that they want to say they're anti-vaxxers, that they're anti-maskers and all of this stuff. No, they're just wanting liberty and rights to be with the mom. If the mom chooses not, or the grandma lady chooses not to have a COVID test, she doesn't have to have a COVID test. She wasn't even there for that.
Yeah, I'm curious about the arrest warrants for the people working at the hospital. Where are those?
Yeah, exactly.
Because they held against a legally binding power of attorney, and they held that lady against her will. And that's illegal, that's criminal, that's kidnapping, and we should call for the arrest warrants of all the individuals in charge that put that order through.
And the press conference basically is calling for the sheriff to step down because they are not constitutionally doing their job in protecting the citizens. And so we'll keep an eye on that story. There's some other stories around, as we do around Robin this morning, that I want to mention, because they all in some way or form talk about our rights as citizens and what we should be standing for, you and I. And as we look at our morning news this morning, I want to remind you that it's brought to you by Safe Air Network. Desanitize your air and surfaces within 3 minutes with technology used by NASA, and it's chemical-free. Bring clean, safe air and surfaces to your home, business, school, church, and areas of wherever you go pretty much today. Go to safeairnetwork.com. Now, looking at the headlines out of COIN, they are talking about the problems at the motor vehicle. Oregon Department of Motor Vehicles, expect a wait continuing to happen. People are getting more and more frustrated since the state agency is still facing a three-month backlog due to the pandemic-related delays. It's huge, a huge backlog that we've never experienced anything like this before, David House said, a spokesman for the Oregon DMV. Most appointments at the DMV are booked for the next 2 months. A title transfer is taking about 20 weeks to complete. Officials said it could be this way for a while. And then here's also a story by COIN. The nationwide eviction moratorium is being extended through June 30th. CDC and Prevention announced this Monday. The protection was scheduled to expire in 2 days on the tomorrow on the 31st of March. CDC says COVID-19 pandemic has presented a historic threat to the nation's public health. Keeping people in their homes and out of crowded settings like homeless shelters by preventing evictions is key in helping stop the spread. And of course, I want to talk a little bit about that, Josh, because there are a lot of landlords that people who've invested in rental income, you know, and that's their livelihood too. They haven't got payment, and there's no relief for them. They're still having to pay the mortgages on these properties or taxes and insurance and all of those things, and yet they're getting no payment, and there's no relief for them. Their property, in a sense, has been seized without due process. Correct?
Well, it is correct, but most of the landlords that I've talked to, and I deal with a lot of them, they say that very, very few people are actually following through with that. Most people are still paying their rent. So,
well, that's good to know.
Even though they have that provision, in a lot of cases that I've talked to with people and landlords and, you know, multifamily housing units and stuff like that, is most people are still paying their rent, which I don't know. Yeah. And, you know, you want to get into it.
It's, right. Well, and it's just it's the government interfering with things that, you know, yeah. that there are programs and relief and help to help people pay their rent that's already out there and in place again. And then you have the businesses that aren't required necessarily. And you have people who own great buildings that they rent out and lease, and the businesses are still operating. I mean, mm-hmm. there's just a lot of conflict out there, and it's an overreach by the government. And then the protests this weekend, you know, they're on Sunday. There were protests at the state capitol. Well, they've arrested some more folks. In fact, it looks like some of the Antifa folks got arrested.
Some? I think it was all.
Yeah, all of them. But there was only about four or five of them, and there certainly was more mm-hmm. trouble than that. I'm sure it's difficult to kind of narrow down who, but they narrowed down Anthony Valenia, who was pointing lasers at drivers as they went by, and then someone by the name of William Isham, who was interfering with a police officer. And then other disorderly conduct, and it is interesting because there was some misinformation stating that the Patriot, who his truck was attacked. I don't know if you heard about that or
watched
that.
Yep.
They were trying to say that he got arrested, and that was misinformation. They'd like to clarify misinformation regarding the circumstances around the man who was detained after displaying a firearm. The person in the photo was the victim of the damage to his vehicle. When he stopped to assess the damage, he was assaulted with pepper spray. After being assaulted with pepper spray, the person pulled a handgun from his waistband to defend himself. He did not point the weapon at anyone. He dropped it when he was ordered to do so by law enforcement. This person has a valid concealed handgun license. This person was detained, interviewed, and then released. Reports will be forwarded to the Marion County District Attorney's Office for review. So, but the media took it as, you know, he was arrested and all this stuff. And again, just the narrative, trying to do the gotcha moment, right? We've talked about that before, to fit their narrative. And watching the video of it, what did you think of that when you saw that video?
Well, I mean, it's basically what my understanding was is that there was an event scheduled. Mm-hmm. A bunch of Patriots came down. The Antifa terrorists came and hijacked their event,
mm-hmm.
caused a big ruckus,
mm-hmm.
forced the Freedom event that they were going to have to basically get dismantled to where they can't have it.
Mm-hmm.
And that was their whole operation. I think they worked in tandem with the Salem police. I think the Salem police protects Antifa, even though they arrested some people and did that. They're very unfair in a lot of their requirements and how they operate. I know that they just got a new police chief, and you can definitely tell a difference of how they're operating.
Well, and I'm curious, I think, to do the research to find out if there was permits, you know, given or granted or whatever. And not that that really matters, because a lot of times they don't pay attention to any of that. But it's certainly something to keep our eye on once right here in our own backyard. Here's something from the Salem City Council. This is coming out of the Kaiser Times. Salem City Council approved the placement of 20 pallet homes at a city-owned property on Portland Road Northeast to be used as unsheltered residence. This investment is an important step in achieving one of our top council priorities, said Salem Mayor Chuck Bennett in a press release. As we work together to solve Salem's homelessness issues, we must also be open to innovative solutions like the pallet shelters that have proved to be successful in other cities. The pallet shelters, which will cost Salem $5,000 each, are designed to accommodate single individuals and couples with electricity, warmth, and added security. So we are now building in the parkway there homes. Tiny homes.
Yeah. Well, if you look back, you know, if you go to Portland out by OMSI over the bridge, right under the bridge there, they have something called pallet homes in mm-hmm. that section there. Mm-hmm. It looks like a homeless camp, mm-hmm. But they've done a lot of deep investigating, mm-hmm. and that is where the heart of the Antifa and BLM activists, that's where they hide out and that's where they come from. Mm. And that's where a lot of those guys are. So essentially what that press release is saying is that we are now building an Antifa BLM stronghold for the city of Salem to where more disruption and they're going to be able to hide out in there. And that is exactly what's going on in Portland. And that's probably what's going to happen here in Salem.
The difficulty for me is this really the solution that is needed? We need to get...
it makes a good point because when we spoke with Chuck Bennett mm-hmm. in here, what was his words when we were asking about the homeless issue? He said, well, that's not our problem. That's the state's problem. That's the state's property. We're not going to get involved with that. And anything involved with the city, then yes, we'll be involved. But if it's not involved in the city, then that's the state of Oregon. And we've tried to reach out to them and they're just not cooperating. So essentially, the city is picking up the state's mess mm-hmm. On trying to create that. But I mean, realistically, it's this pandemic nonsense and the shutdown of the economy and the shutdown of infrastructure and systems and just different things that are going on that are creating a bigger problem. It's mm-hmm. not anything else but just the lockdowns. Let's open up Oregon. Let's take off your masks. Here's why we're going to have a spike in this pandemic nonsense. It's because everybody's going around and getting their vaccine. What do you think's in that vaccine? Mm. It's giving you the virus.
Yes, it is.
So you're going to have a variant. You're going to have it doesn't get any more
positive.
Cut dry than that. They've already said it doesn't protect you. They already said you still have to wear a mask. Now they're trying to push getting children vaccines. Mm. And they're saying, oh, children can't get vaccines yet because it's not legal, but we're working on it.
Well, and we got to remind ourselves it's really not a vaccine. It's a gene therapy. And so it's all in the language, right? And so the difficulty for me, again, is that it's not changing the circumstances. It's really not shifting to a place where we can get back to what we know
and
is normal.
And that's the thing. You got to get that out of your head that that's what's happening. Mm-hmm. The reality is there's no reason, absolutely no reason, why the DMV cannot get their stuff together. It's been a year. Mm. What they're doing is they're creating catastrophes in our lives to get us to be compliant mm-hmm. and disrupting things like things at the DMV. Mm-hmm. And that's what it's for, is to get you to take your shot and be compliant and sit at home and wear your mask.
And creating more chaos and crisis, and then seem to come in with, oh, we have the solution.
That's right.
I don't trust any of it. We're going to continue the conversation after this. Reliable News Talk Radio, KSLM, Stacey Ann and Josh hanging out with you on this Tuesday. We'll be back.
Good morning. It's a good morning. Wake up to a brand new day. This morning.
Good morning to you, Reliable News Talk Radio, KSLM. 39 degrees here at the KSLM studio. Going to get up to 56 degrees tomorrow, by the way. 68 degrees, going to be really close to that 70 degree mark. I'm so excited about that. I may, Josh, have to go wander on over to the coast and take a gander there and get me some good ocean air. And there's something about nature and connecting and getting that, you know, quietness away from technology and all the hustle and bustle, and it can be overwhelming, all the news and Here's some interesting news that we need to act on, friends. We're continuing to talk about this morning some of the things that are affecting our liberties. And one of this, when we talk about the mask mandate, one of the things OSHA is trying to do here in Oregon is enact permanent workplace rule that you have to wear the mask all the time. And we are asking everybody, there's a petition. We put a link on our KSLM radio page. We're also asking you to email tech, T-E-C-H dot web at oregon.gov and write in the subject line, Open Oregon, COVID-19 mandates in the workplace. And write your thoughts, be honorable, write your thoughts, but talk about how it's impacting your liberty and it's not, your constitutional rights, both in Oregon and in the U.S., it's infringing on all of that. And so we need to stand strong. In fact, I just got a fun little headline, Josh, I read it to you, from Charlie Kirk, which, by the way, Charlie Kirk is right after me from 10 to noon, and I am loving his show. I'm loving his concepts and his ways to talk about these issues that are affecting our liberties and talk in an intelligent manner that we can talk and be persuadable with people in our circles of influence. But Charlie Kirk just talked about a school board member who is trying to push mandatory masks in the schools and passed out because they were wearing a mask. And that's kind of the irony of it all. And speaking of school board, here in Salem, we have an election this spring, and I haven't really been talking about it, and I really want to encourage our listeners, one, make sure you're registered to vote, and two, really be aware of who's running for the Salem-Keizer School Board. And there's an organization called Marion Polk First, and they're a PAC, and they've endorsed four candidates. For Zone 1, they've endorsed Carrie Zoner. For Zone 3, Linda Farrington. For Zone 5, Mike Slagle, I believe is how you say his name. And for Zone 7, Liam Collins. Now, a lot of people, when I'll be looking up this information, are like, oh, how do I even know what zone I'm in? Well, the school board election's a little different, Josh, than our regular elections, in that when you vote for the person that's in your zone. Marion County School District, Salem-Keizer School District, if they're on the board, the whole city votes for them. So it's good to know who the candidates are and who these are, ones that have been vetted by the Marion Polk First group. And then in Lynn County, of course, Lynn County lost their commissioner. He passed away, John Lindsay, and his term is going to be filled. And he passed away on March 9th of cancer. Seven applicants are seeking appointment, provided resumes, and were verified by Lynn County's clerk office, meeting the eligibility requirements outlined. 66 elected precinct committee persons were credentialed by a volunteer delegation officers from the Marion County Republican Party and deemed eligible to participate and vote on the nominating process. So they're going to go ahead and move forward with nominating a successor to the Lynn County Commission. So that's something, too, that we will be watching. And as we talk about these mask mandates, when we talk about these things that are infringing on our liberties, what's some wisdom and some advice, Josh? I know it's overwhelming and we could just say, let's just throw in the towel and move out of the country. But what do people need to be doing? Not just talking about it. We talked about that before the show started. What should they do?
So that's a great question. Really, what it comes down to is enacting your own personal freedoms. And the way that you do that, yeah, you can write your congressperson, you can, send a letter to OSHA and do all that stuff. But really, these people don't work for you. And they've demonstrated that. They demonstrate that they don't really care about what you say or what you do, because I know that their inboxes are getting flooded. And I know that because I have some people that work over there. And the reality is they're not taking orders from you. Kate Brown's not taking orders from you. She's taking orders from her handlers and whomever that is dictating things. It's more of a global system under Fauci and the CDC and things of the sort. That's where these ridiculous situations are coming from. And, just enacting these policies is, it doesn't make sense. The 6-foot rule, do you know where that came from? It doesn't make sense, mm-mm, right? The masks, you can wear your mask, walk in 3 feet and go sit down at your table and go eat. That doesn't make sense. It is all part of a more global plan, mm-hmm, in which they've enacted, they've talked about, they've written papers for. This whole plan is to bankrupt the country and consolidate all the wealth and consolidate all the economy and break everything. Because if you look at how things have happened, they don't care about what we do. They don't care about what happens to us. It's all about consolidation. Amazon is up profits. Microsoft's up profits. Google's up profits and everything else. So what we could do is just stop complying. The key is just stop complying. Walk in, get some fringe. Educate the mask Nazi when you go into a store. Say, no, I'm not going to wear that. What are you going to do about it?
Mm-hmm.
And really challenge those people and start doing it in groups. Be intimidating. Some great news. There's a lot of people around me that, you know, they started wearing masks last year and they see me walking and doing what I do without wearing it. And they're like, why do I have this on? So they took it off. Now they're starting to go into different stores and everything else. Now they've gone into, you know, Macy's and Target and, you know, different places, and they're not getting any friction and they don't care. And it's just that you can't care anymore. You can't worry about the repercussions. That's when you start getting your liberty back, when you actually start acting on it.
Well, and anymore, if someone's had COVID or have had the shot, you know, people, I think the enforcers are a little more intimidated to go after them because they may have had COVID already or they may have had the shot. So,
and I want to talk about the shot when we get back.
Yes. Yeah. You're listening to Reliable News Talk Radio, KSLM, news that you can use on this Tuesday and every day. We'll be back. Morning to you. You're listening to Reliable News Talk Radio, KSLM. Hello, I'm Stacey Ann. Thanking you for tuning in today on this Tuesday. Want to say thank you to Bill Sunderland, Country Financial Sunderland Agency, for being a morning show sponsor. If you are needing insurance and help in that area, get a hold of Bill, sunderlandagency.com, or give him a call, 503-885-0789. In the studio with me is Josh. And Josh, you know, we were talking about the COVID vaccine. We were talking about, which we said is really not a vaccine. It's gene therapy. We're talking about, we haven't talked about all the influx coming into the border, but we talked about the irony of the mask and trying to, say that the masks are so important and the getting this shot is so important. And then guess what? They're letting all these people come in and flooding
in the border right now.
Is that the point
they're
you wanted to talk about?
Them.
Yes.
They're shipping them all over the country.
Mm-hmm. And it looks like they're trying to ship them to red states, which is very interesting. And I think this is something that we need to stay on top of. It can get lost in the news. And I know a lot of people are like, well, the election's over. That was November. But we need to be mindful of some of the things that are being revealed right now. And on the air with me, I've got Trevor Carlson, Senior Research Fellow at the Foundation for Government Accountability. And he's on the air with a new report by the Foundation for Government Accountability. Good morning, Trevor. Thank you for joining us in the conversation this morning. You know, these COVID-related grants that were supposed to go to these communities to help keep people safe, et cetera, actually, you're finding out something a little different, aren't you?
Yeah, so thank you for having me. It's a pleasure to be on with you this morning. Let me just set the stage with some background. My colleagues and I at the Foundation for Government Accountability have been researching these COVID-19 response grants, which were provided to election jurisdictions by the Center for Tech and Civic Life. And these grants went to more than 2,500 election offices across 47 states during the 2020 election. And they earned the moniker Zuckerbucks from us because the Center for Tech and Civic Life, or CTCL, which previously operated in the $1 million range, received donations of $350 million from the Chan Zuckerberg Initiative so that CTCL could then re-grant those dollars to local election jurisdictions as they conducted the 2020 election. And as we look into these Zuckerbucks, we're learning some interesting details about how the money was spent and the apparent impact on voter turnout. And so on that voter turnout aspect, in 2020, turnout was kind of through the roof in comparison to 2016. We saw across the board just major increases. But as we've been looking at the counties that received these Zuckerbucks, we had a bit of a curious finding, and that was that while turnout was across was up across the board, in the states and counties that we've looked at so far, counties that received Zuckerbucks saw turnout for the Democratic ticket go up by more than that of the Republican ticket. And comparing that to counties that didn't receive these funds, turnout tended to be increasing at more, the increase tended to be more evenly distributed among the two major parties.
And why do you think that is? I mean, it sounds like a little pay to play something going on. Talk to us a little bit about how these monies were used.
Yeah, so one of the things that we found curious about this was, again, these were advertised as COVID-19 response grants. The assumption was that they would be going, the funds would be used exclusively for protecting voters and election workers from transmission of COVID-19 as they conducted the election, as voters showed up to vote at the polling place. And curiously, we found that in many cases, very little was spent on personal protection of equipment, PPE, and in some cases, no money from these grants was spent at all on that category, which begs the question, well, what was the money being spent on? And some of the anomalies that we found was, instead of spending money on PPE, there were Get Out the Vote campaigns, not necessarily directed towards a particular audience, but just that, you know, again, something that doesn't seem to align with the intended focus of these grants. Another was registering high schoolers to vote, a perfectly fine thing to do, but with from an election administration perspective and with respect to COVID-19, there's some question there. And then also like purchasing vehicles that the claim was that they were used to go out again to help register people to vote, but how spending $60,000 or so on a van protects voters and poll workers from the transmission of COVID-19 is certainly something that I'm a little perplexed by.
Yeah, that's a great point. Now, I just have another question, Trevor. You said that there was an influx in Democratic voting with who received the money and who didn't. Right now, did you were you able to confirm or dig in any deeper of potential fake ballots, uncertified ballots, additional influx in ballots? Do you guys have any experience with that of looking at anything along those lines with the mail-in ballots?
That's not something that's clear from what we've looked at this point, but it's certainly critique or a concern that I've heard about, and with that in mind,
go ahead. So in New York they were paying for ballots to be stuffed in certain districts, and people were making about $3,000 a box is what they were getting paid to do, to basically fill out these ballots and then ship them off. And so there are these different organizations that they were making money as a business, and they had tens and tens and tens and tens of people just stuffing and filling out these ballots and submitting them. I'm just wondering if some of that money, and now this is just speculative, I don't have any information on it, but it would be interesting to find out if some of those stuffed ballots made their way to Oregon.
Well, and I'm curious too, Trevor, about accountability and the fiscal side of this as far as tracking the money. How easy is it to track where these funds were spent? In regards to what organizations did they write the grants to, and how did those organizations then implement that? Is that something you're able to follow through completely with your office?
Yeah, so that's actually a good point of clarification. So these grants that we're talking about went specifically to election jurisdictions. Mm. So these are like the counties that administered the election, mm-hmm. Not necessarily private organizations that did their own get out the vote efforts, or that have partisan ties or anything like that. But one thing that I would like to mention is that there's certainly a concern when you have these dollars coming from the Chan Zuckerberg initiative, to administer, you know, where they're financially involved in the administration of elections. And at the same time, and here's an example specific for Oregon, the Chan Zuckerberg Initiative was a proponent of Measure 110 and gave $500,000 to the campaign for that measure in the 2020 election. Mm-hmm. And so there's certainly a concern when you have third-party actors both mm-hmm. promoting a very specific outcome and then also financially tied to the administration that determines that final outcome. And so that's something that's certainly concerning.
It seems to me, Trevor, that this is unprecedented. Can we find any other time in election history where grants or bucks like this were given directly to counties for the purpose of getting out the vote or election or influencing in this way? And it seems so hit and miss, not across the board. It's suspect in my mind. Have we ever had this happened before?
You're right. This is certainly bizarre, and to my knowledge, it's not something that occurred previously. The case was made that this is a special circumstance. The Center for Tech and Civic Life talked about this in some of their press releases, where they were touting this grant that they received from the Chan Zuckerberg Initiative. And I think it's important to note that Mark Zuckerberg himself, in a Facebook post discussing this donation to CTCL, actually suggested that it was inappropriate for third-party actors to be financially involved in the administration of elections. And so in that respect, I certainly agree with Mr. Zuckerberg.
The corporate influence is mind-boggling into these elections. And I understand on the premise of, oh, we're in a pandemic, we're facing unprecedented times and wanting to make it look like a compassionate response to what many communities are dealing with, they kind of slipped it in under that guise. And it seems like a huge conflict of interest that counties need to deal with, along with states. And there are states all across the union that are starting to look at how this election process happened and deal with the integrity of each of the elections. My question to you is, what do you see needs to happen to prevent this this influx of money and this influence in elections?
Yeah, that's a really good question. And as you noted, states have a responsibility here. And on this issue in particular, I think the solution is very simple, and that's that states should prohibit election jurisdictions from accepting funding from private actors and third parties. And the reason for that is it introduces additional transparency into the process and how elections are conducted. And voters want that. They want to have the election process be transparent, and it restores integrity to the electoral process and gives voters confidence. And I think that's very important.
So once this is this research is concluded, are you pretty much done with it? Now you're making published reports about it. Do you present that then on to Congress, or are you coming to state by state? Is that how you're doing this?
Yeah. So I think our reports are shedding some light on a process that is incredibly untransparent, especially from the perspective of how the Center for Tech and Civic Life is operating. They have a requirement in their grant process to have the jurisdictions that they granted money to produce reports on how they spent the money. And those were due by January 31st of this year. We're now in March, and to my knowledge, they haven't made those publicly available or posted them on their website. It would be nice to have them be transparent in that respect. On that same note, one of the things that's included in their grant reports is an option for counties, to request an extension if they haven't used all the funds. And so I think the extension goes through mid-2021 if they're granted an extension. And so there'll be additional research that we need to do to find out how that money was spent in addition to the money that was originally spent in the 2020 election specifically. So there's still a lot of research to do. We've published initial briefs on a number of states, Pennsylvania, Arizona being a couple of them, Iowa and Florida as well. And we're kind of in the early stages of digging into this and trying to gather as much information as we can, and that we hope it'll be useful to state legislators as they consider other reforms, and specifically on this front, the transparency reform and prohibiting third parties from financing the administration of elections. But yeah, that's more research to be done, and we hope that our efforts are informative.
Well, and I think it's incredible, the timing of all of this, because I think we need to keep this in the forefront of everybody's minds on what happened, what can we do different, and how we can get our hands around it at the local level to make sure that we do have the integrity in elections. Trevor, will you hang out with me a little bit longer? I got a few more questions for you after this break, if that's okay.
Yeah, I certainly can.
All right. You're listening to Reliable News Talk Radio, KSLM, news that you can use on this Tuesday. And every day, we'll be back after this. Hey, yeah, you, in the back of the room with those... Good morning.
Good morning.
It's a good morning. Wake up to a brand new day.
Good morning to you. You're listening to Reliable News Talk Radio, KSLM. I'm Stacey Ann. Josh had to move along to his job this morning. So you just have me for the rest of the show this morning, which is okay because we have a lot to talk about yet. We're going to continue the conversation here in just a moment with Trevor. I want to remind you, friends, there's a lot going on in the community. We've got Easter this weekend and, of course, the Good Friday services with the family, Salem Family YMCA. They're going to do an online prayer service and event. You can join them on their YouTube channel or on Facebook and participate in that event and bring your support. I want to encourage you to come out tomorrow night to the River Church. We're going to continue on with Liberty First University with Chris Ann Hall training us, and it's of no cost to each of us. Normally to take this class online, there would be a fee, but it's free. It's at 7 p.m., and you can still get registered to come. If you want the link, send me an email, Stacey, S-T-A-C-E-Y, at KSLM.news. And then also, the Safe School Summit is coming up April 24th. That's parentsrightsineducation.org. Get signed up for that. And you know what's coming right around the corner. Oh, I'm so excited about this. May 13th. Yep, it's the first baseball game right here at the Volcano Stadium, and I'm looking forward to that as well. So we'll keep your community calendar events coming towards me. Send them to me, Stacey, S-T-A-C-E-Y, at KSLM.news, and we'll mention your event that's right around the corner. We're continuing the conversation this morning with Trevor Carlson, Senior Research Fellow at the Foundation for Government Accountability. Boy, that's a mouthful, Trevor. And I certainly appreciate what you and your organization is doing, because for policymakers, and I would say even in a state like Oregon, where we have a supermajority of Democrats in our state, it's very difficult to move legislation or even resolutions that have a conservative message. But we have several counties that have conservatives that are on the commission, on the councils and things like that. How can a person take this information, this research that you have, and utilize it to change policy?
Great, I appreciate the question. So the Foundation for Government Accountability's website is thefga.org. And we have a number of resources on there, including these briefs that we've been talking about this morning, and then also just additional resources identifying some of the problems that are out there and you know, possible solutions for how states and counties can better restore the faith in the election process and have a strong election.
I love the aspect of your organization coming alongside, because so many times these kinds of things aren't easy to discover on our own. We might be suspect that there was misuse of funds and accountability and an audit might need to happen, but we don't always know how to go about that. So your organization has been around for how long, and what other areas are you exploring that could be useful to our listeners?
Yeah, so FGA has been around for roughly a decade, and you know, one of the areas that we are strongly involved in is promoting work and championing work as a solution to a lot of the problems we face. You know, we view work as a way to be sprung out of a poverty safety net. Mm-hmm. And that's something that we've been working on for a number of years, and working with state legislators to better understand what policies can help promote people to live the American dream, and tackling those policies that have pushed us down paths that we didn't, that maybe had unintended consequences.
So you reinforce the idea of, in a sense, that old saying, teach a man to fish, right? Instead of just providing the fish, you show ways, practical ways that incentivize the reason to go to work. And I've seen some interesting memes on social media the last few days about, all the signs for, hire, gonna hire. This job's open, this opportunity's open, and yet the lines are out the door for unemployment because of the extra bonus that's happening because of the stimulus. And it really does have a rippling effect when we have people out of work and not motivated to go back to work, right?
Yeah, that's certainly the case. And I think it's important to point out here that, there's been some criticism of work requirements for programs like Medicaid and food stamps. And what our research has shown is that in many cases when states have enacted common sense work requirements, they've been able to put people in a position where they are making much more than the benefits they used to be receiving when they were on these programs. And, with that comes any number of other positive outcomes. But just that alone is a solid argument for why work requirements are a good policy to have. And so that's just one example.
Well, and it just makes sense. And you said the two words that it seems like we can't find a chart for anywhere, common sense, through this craziness of this last year. And I certainly appreciate your organization and what you're doing to kind of highlight some of the areas that we need to be alerted to and how we can have integrity in our elections, easy for me to say, and ability to make a difference at the local level. Because I think voters are very frustrated right now. They're wondering, does my vote even make a difference? And I will say yes, stay engaged in the process, access this information from your organization, and let's see what we can do at the local level to bring some awareness and make sure that third party interference, in a sense, I'll just call it what it is, in an election, it certainly didn't get spent the way that it needed to. How can people find this report one more time?
Yeah, so it's online at thefga.org.
Excellent. Thank you so much, Trevor, for your time today. And I do encourage you to stay in connection with us when you have more revealing information about voter election integrity or any of the other subjects we talked about this morning. Have a great day.
Thank you. You as well.
And that was a wonderful interview with Trevor this morning and getting an update. I think it's something that's really important, friends, that we realize that we can make a difference locally. And when we can take these kinds of this information, these reports, the data, and we can take it to our local county clerks, we can take it to our local county commissions that influence what's going on in our states, it's important to know that these things have had a rippling effect across the country. And I find it kind of disturbing that they're influencing, the corporations are influencing our elections in the way that they have this last year. And I know many of us are unplugging from the big corporations like Facebook and Amazon and all of those things. And it seems like in these days, these last few days in the last year or so, that these corporations have had more governmental influence making policy than even our elected leaders that we've elected. And we are a republic. We're a constitutional republic, and we elect people that are supposed to represent we the people. And we cannot forget that we hold the power. We do hold the power, even though it feels these days like we can't do much or we're not being heard. We can still stand strong, stand together, and make a difference. So I encourage you to do your part today. Make sure you are registered to vote. Make sure you get your friends and family around you registered to vote, because we have a school board election right here in the Salem-Keizer area, just right around the corner. And we want to make sure that we are electing the people that line up with our values. It's so extremely important. Again, this podcast will be up on our website at kslm.news. In fact, there's an archive there. You can go back and listen to any of the shows from this past year. You can listen to any of our shows that we play throughout the day. And of course, coming up at the top of the hour is Charlie Kirk. He'll be here up until noon. Noon to 3 is Sean Hannity. And then from 3 to 6 is Mark Levin. And then at 6 o'clock is Dan Bongino. You're listening to Reliable News Talk Radio. KSLM. I'm enjoying my time with you this morning, friends. You have a fantastic day. Remember, God bless you, and may God bless the USA. To be an American,
'cause there ain't no doubt I love this land.